Running a business keeps you on your toes. Wouldn't it be great if your internet connection could keep up? Introducing Business Class Fiber from Vox. It's super fast, reliable, and highly cost-effective. You get unlimited calls to all SA destinations, and it's scalable. So no matter the size of your business, you've still got room to grow. Get connected with Business Class Fiber from Vox and see what super fast internet really means. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Thank you for downloading the Tech Central podcast. I'm Duncan McLeod. Now, I'm on a Skype call today with none other than Vinnie Lingham, who I think needs little or no introduction to readers of Tech Central. Vinnie's joining us all the way from San Francisco today. Hey, Vinnie, thanks for joining us and really great to chat to you again.
Hey, Duncan, good to be here. Thank you.
For the few who don't know, Vinnie is a South African internet entrepreneur, born in East London, but now lives in San Francisco. Very briefly, Vinnie has launched a number of startups, including website builder Yola and mobile gift card platform Gift, which he sold to First Data Corporation in 2014 in a deal rumored at the time to be worth more than $50 million. He also co-founded Silicon Cape with Justin Stanford. And of course, I think many South Africans know you, Vinnie, from your involvement with the reality TV series Shark Tank and Dragon's Den. How did you find being on those TV shows, by the way? Were they a valuable experience?
Oh, they were great. I really enjoyed meeting people, interacting with folks, and in quite a rapid succession. So it's very time efficient if you think about it. I spend better part of like 10 days going through 50 or 60 pitches and probably making 5 to 10 investments on average. So it's good. You get a big exposure. You also get to see the sort of dark underbelly of where entrepreneurship is in South Africa. Unfortunately, yeah. It's not all rosy. And so some of the investments I've made have worked out. Some haven't. Overall, I think I'm net positive on the money invested versus the returns I've received. But I think it's interesting. There was a good Harvard Business School article out yesterday, actually, and just talking about the types of entrepreneurship and you get productive versus unproductive entrepreneurship. And there's some good lessons there. I won't go into details now, but I think we need to take a very hard look at entrepreneurship in South Africa and realize that there's a lot of change that needs to happen for us to progress, because not all entrepreneurship is created equal.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk to you about your views on South Africa at the moment, and particularly on the tech scene here in the country. But Vinnie, you've been very, very busy over the last few years. First you sold Gift, then you launched your current business, Civic, which focuses on identity protection and management on the internet. What's the backstory to Civic? How did this company come about, and what's the tech you've developed here?
Yeah, so what we've really solved, we think, is the problem of digital identity being something which is difficult to prove when you're not there in person. So banks want you to come in with a bank, a utility bill, or do you fika and rika, you have to go to the store. They have this need to have people present to verify identity. And we've basically solved that problem by using digital and cryptographic signatures. It's basically cryptography is the branch of mathematics that is involved with encryption and whatnot. And so by using math, we're able to confirm that information hasn't been duplicated or replicated, and that it's basically what secures the internet right now.
Right.
And so what blockchain and Bitcoin did, or the innovation behind Bitcoin, was you could create these tokens which could never be spent twice. Because if I've got some money in my computer and you go and edit the database, you can change the number. Well, then that doesn't mean that the amount of money has gone up. So so that's why banking security systems are so tightened, because just changing a number would create money out of thin air. With Bitcoin and blockchain, you can't do that. The double spend problem was the problem that was solved by Satoshi Nakamoto when they created Bitcoin. And I think that we've taken the same principles and we've built our technology of Civic on top of Bitcoin, knowing that, well, you can't have the same information replicated twice, and we can make sure that it's proven. And so when someone does a transaction online and they're able to use their thumbprint on their phone and validate the signatures on the device digitally, you don't actually have to have the physical person there. You could just assume that the authentication was done correctly. And the reason we got to this point was when I built Gift, we saw a lot of identity theft and fraud being used in our systems. And it was a big issue which was never resolved. And after I joined First Data and worked at First Data through Gift, I just realized this is a problem that's not going to go away unless someone tackles it. And then the biggest sort of existential question I was asking myself around, what do I want to do the next phase of my life? I've had a whole bunch of businesses. I've had a lot of good successes. How can I really change the world in a positive and meaningful way? And, kind of get inspired by what Elon Musk does. And I thought, shouldn't we get to the point in the world where we have digital passports, digital identities, everything tied to your mobile device, and everything digitized, so you don't have to walk around with a driver's license or a passport anymore, which, by the way, those are easier to fake than a digital signature.
Yeah.
So, the biggest problem I'd like to solve in the world and my mission for the company is get to the point in time where the entire world is able to use a platform like Civic to do voting in the election. So you don't have to leave the comfort of your home to go stand in line at a booth and risk being intimidated. You could just sit at home and vote. And the digital signatures would sign the transactions and they would all be tabulated in real time. So you don't have to wait, and have a recount and another recount and try and figure out who voted for what. And in order to do voting, you have to have an immense amount of privacy because that's obviously a very sensitive topic. So we had to build the systems around privacy. Can you imagine if we had everyone in the world's information on our servers and then we got hacked? That would just be the death of the world and the company. You basically have a fully compromised database. So we built the system in such a way that everyone's information sits only on their devices and nowhere else. So you cannot have a situation where Civic is hacked and your information is out there because it doesn't sit on our servers. Someone has to have literally physical possession of your phone and your thumbprint and your passwords. And even if it happens, it's one person, right? So the network doesn't get compromised if one person gets compromised, or even a dozen or a thousand, assuming we have millions of users. So there was a lot of technical and architectural discussions and around how we would build the platform. And I think we wound up in a good place.
Okay. Are you saying that the system is completely foolproof?
Well, right now, without quantum computing, yes.
Okay.
With quantum computing, we'd have to upgrade the algorithms and the encryption methods because that would basically render our encryption standards null and void in minutes. Okay. But quantum computing is a far way out. We're talking 5 to 10 years minimum. I mean, I'd probably say 7 to 15 years before it's at the point where we can take it out. I mean, we're using SHA-256 encryption.
Right.
To give you a sense, Google has just cracked like SHA-1 using all their compute power recently.
Okay.
And that was one single collision they were able to create. So for the technical audience, you guys know what I'm talking about. It's going to take the better part of the next decade to crack SHA-256 with digital computing.
Yeah.
Quantum computing could move that forward a bit faster. But again, I think we're in a good spot. And it's really easy for us to upgrade the encryption algorithms and technology, relatively speaking. So when the time comes, we just upgrade to a more sophisticated encryption methodology. Yeah. So yes, our solution is about as foolproof as it gets, without an alien ship landing here with technology we've never seen before. As far as human tech is concerned, I think we're good.
Okay. All right. You mentioned voting. I suppose that's always going to be a contentious issue. I mean, we saw what happened in the U.S. election last time around, and this investigation is now happening regarding Russian hackers, et cetera. So, I think a lot of people, particularly people who are not tech savvy and perhaps don't have the wherewithal to have a look at what it is exactly that you're building here, I'd imagine there would be a lot of pushback to that sort of thing. And just what we've seen in the headlines over the last little while, I'm sure, is making people quite reluctant about using technology in elections, I would imagine.
Yeah, so that's a good point. And I think if we take the perspective that the way it's being thought about happening today is wrong, which it is, and this is why these things are happening, and that there is a better solution out there, and you go with an open mind.
Yeah.
When you review the architecture, you'll find that we don't even know who the people are. So
yes.
When you create the account and you have your account in Civic, it's your data's on your device. You choose who you share it with.
Mm.
You want to go register with a government to vote in an election, they will know who you are, they won't know, and whatever information you share with them, and they'll register you to vote. But when you actually go and cast the vote later on, the way we would do it is provide a token which is registered to their users, or whoever's voting on the election. But they wouldn't know which particular person cast which vote, and neither would we. So that's how we basically are thinking about the system, is that it's dual. It's still kind of like a double-blind privacy, so it's need-to-know basis. So you need to just know that the people who registered participated in the event, and there is no way of mapping back the vote being cast with the person who was registered. And you can tabulate in real time to make sure that there were never more votes cast than what was registered to vote. So so the way this works using the blockchain is that these transactions are, you know, they can never be double counted. You can't cast two votes. But with digital, with traditional systems, you can double vote easily and you can modify databases. With blockchain, you can't. It's just, it's immutable. And that's what makes it so powerful.
Okay. Are you opening this up to scrutiny by other companies, by developers, by other entities that are you making the code available so that people can scrutinize it in the same way that open source software is analyzed for potential vulnerabilities or that sort of thing? Or is it not even relevant in this instance?
So it's not. It's obviously blockchain is all open source, but the stuff we've done is not open yet.
Okay.
We will in future. And so that's when we get to the point where we're powering government elections, et cetera, that's probably 3, 4, 5, 7 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we will obviously open source it. And in fact, the company may not exist as a for-profit entity, maybe just become a non-profit entity. And that's why the way we look at this is that it's a mission for the company to solve a problem for the world. And open sourcing open sourcing a security company like this in the early stages, we just launched less than a month ago, is not a good thing because, you know, unless we have the resources to go and make the security changes right now, then it's open to exploit. But by the time we get further down the stack, and so 1 or 2 years in from where we are today, and we've had security audits done, we've had some of the best hackers and cryptographers in the world have worked on the product, and we're very confident that this is government / bank grade security. It just doesn't make sense for us to open source right now. Why take that extra risk right now where there's no real benefit because we don't need to open source it, and there's no community right now that can develop on it right now, just the way, because we're so immature in terms of the product phase that we're in. But within a couple of years, we absolutely will go that route. But it doesn't make sense right now. So it's just a timing issue.
Sure.
It's not an unwillingness to do it. And it's why take unacceptable risks that don't really impact or positive or negatively the business right now.
Sure, sure. Now, Vinny, this week, as I understand it, you're going to launch an ICO. I'm not sure if that's pronounced ICO or ICO, or initial coin offering. Is that in any way like an IPO or stock market listing? What is it exactly, and how much money are you looking to raise through that process?
So first of all, the term ICO is kind of a play on the word IPO. And an initial public offering is the first time the shares of a company are made offered for sale to the public.
Right.
And ICO is somewhat different. I mean, we really have existing investors and shareholders in the company.
Mm-hmm.
They're equity holders. Equity holders benefit from the company's assets and profits. And, we all have a definition of the business and how it works. And it's well documented. An ICO is initial coin offering. So the notion behind an ICO is that a company, a for-profit company, can create a network. So Bitcoin's a network. It's not owned by anyone, but it's a network.
Mm-hmm.
But so we're creating a network, the Civic Network, which is it's an asset. It's a technology product. And we're issuing tokens. And the first time these tokens are ever being sold to the public is through what is called an ICO, or we refer to as a token sale. So you will not be able to buy – well, you'll be able to buy these tokens from us in the future. We still keep a reserve for sale, but this is the first time they're being offered. And we're not raising money. It's actually revenue. We're selling tokens. So we've already sold $33 million of the tokens, which is our cap. We're not selling more in this round right now.
Right.
And we've pre-sold that to hundreds of buyers that have bought anywhere from $50,000 to $500,000 worth of tokens. And we then have what we call a crowd sale, which goes live on Wednesday, the 21st of June.
Yeah.
And a crowd sale is essentially the smaller buyers, so maximum $25,000, but as low as a couple hundred bucks dollars. And we basically are allowing smaller buyers to buy in and push out the big guys. So if you were a big guy buying and you put down $500,000, you paid $500,000 for these tokens, but you're going to get refunded up to $167,000. And the reason for that is that we want to guarantee at least a third of all the tokens we sell to just a broader public of people who are smaller or bigger buyers. Now, you're not investing. So you're not investing in the company. You're buying a piece of a network. It's a very different notion.
Okay.
The company, Civic, still owns one third of the network, but the other one third is owned by just people who want to be part of the network. It's network access. And so the value of that is if you want to use the network, we have companies buying tokens because they want to give tokens to their users, or they want to use it for smart contracting, because what we do is – you know, when we do an ID verification for a company, they have to settle and pay in tokens and use the smart contracting services that's available within the token itself, then they need to own these tokens. So some companies are buying them now. Some will probably buy them later on.
Mm.
But there's real utility, and we're only ever issuing 1 billion tokens for this network.
Okay.
And so that's what an ICO is, basically. And everyone's got a slightly different take on it, but that's how we've done it. And so we're selling network access right now. And it's an early access token because the tokens aren't usable today, but they'll be usable in about 6 months.
Okay.
But the good thing is that companies right now are already implementing civic technology into their platform. So we have a token market, for example, where you can sign up on the Civic app and then you can reuse those credentials to sign into token market. We're replacing SMS for security. So companies are using us right now, like BitGo, to protect your Bitcoin wallet. You turn off your SMS. They've actually taken SMS out because it's not secure and anyone can get hold of SMSs and hack the networks. And you'll now use Civic to authenticate. So you log in, username and password, and then you'll confirm via your device that it's you logging into the site, and then it lets you in. Alternatively, then there are sites that I'll be building on the back of Civic where it's just there's no username or password. You just scan a QR code using your phone and you log into the site. No username and password, and no chance of someone being able to steal it because there's no central database where they can hack and get the information. The information is only on your phone. So, and you have to authenticate using cryptography to get into the site. So these are things we're doing with the platform. And so the bigger the network grows, the more users and the more companies using it,
mm-hmm.
the more we think that the value accrues to the network, of which we only benefit 1/3 as a company, but the other 2/3 sit within the network participants.
Okay. This is all new to me, Vinny, so some of what you've said has gone straight over my head. But
no worries.
What you're doing here is, I mean, what's the primary reason for this? Why do this initial coin offering?
So it's groundbreaking in a sense. Okay. I mean, obviously, we've seen the success of networks like Ethereum and Bitcoin. The reason for doing it is that network participation is critical to building networks. I mean, if you look at chicken and egg problem, how do you get millions of users on board? How do you get companies to use the product? It's always like, well, who starts first? But the moment you say everyone owns a piece of the network, the people who are buying into the network want to use the networks more and more.
Right.
And therefore it gets, and it's not for the benefit of the company. So like Facebook owns their whole network. You can't own a piece of Facebook's network. You can buy equity in Facebook as a company and the value they extract out of the network, you could benefit from that, but you can't own a piece of the network. Now, you would argue, well, why is that important? You know, because the equity structure is way more valuable. Well, let's take a different example. Let's compare Civic tokens as something which is a commodity. Okay. Well, let's look at other commodities. So gold. Okay. Gold exists in the world in various places, but it's a limited resource. Everyone knows this. And there are gold mining companies around the world that mine gold. The value of a gold mining company will almost never exceed the value of the gold market or the amount of gold out there.
Sure.
I think everyone agrees with that. So that's the same thing. We've created this token, and Civic is one company operating on the network. More and more companies may come in and try and replicate what we're doing and compete with us, which is totally fine, using the same token,
right,
which is designed for identification. So it's an ID token. And so we want that token to be extremely valuable in the sense that, but the more people that use it, the more valuable it is in terms of utility for companies.
Mm.
And so an ecosystem can emerge out of this token, and we will be, you know, from a company perspective, we will be extracting value. The more people use our tokens, the more they use our smart contracts, etc. But other companies can come in and do the same thing. So it's a very much an open ecosystem. And if it's an open ecosystem, then we can't stop people from doing it. Now, if I wanted to go and sell ads on Facebook, for example, I can't do that. Facebook owns the network.
Mm.
So that's really how this plays out, is you're separating, you're extricating the network from the ownership structure of a company and saying, let this network be a public asset or utility, and people can then participate in that. And the more people that participate in that, the more valuable it is for everyone. And so that should answer the question as to why would you do it. We do believe that the network effects of having mass global participation in a network exceeds the value of keeping it locked up within a company and saying, well, we own all of this.
Okay. Are you in effect creating your own cryptocurrency here? Was that,
so the difference between a cryptocurrency and a token is very misunderstood.
Okay.
A cryptocurrency is something which is mined. In other words, there are miners processing transactions and making sure that there's lots of reasons for how and nuances on cryptocurrencies, but essentially we don't have a mining infrastructure. We don't use miners to process transactions. We don't have our own mining pools. We don't have any consensus mechanisms in these tokens. We don't do any of that.
Okay.
we're a token. We represent a smart contract or a usage token. It's like a software license. Think about it this way. We're a software license, and there's a fixed amount of them. What we do is we leverage the Bitcoin infrastructure for mining. So we're going to be launching this using a protocol called RSK, which sits on the back of Bitcoin. And so Bitcoin miners will mine the transactions for us. And so it's part of the Bitcoin network, but it's kind of a sub – think of it as like a sub-network within Bitcoin that focuses just on ID verification.
I see. Okay. And these tokens, are they tradable?
We, you know, as a company, we can sell these licenses. It's like think of this as a Magic the Gathering cards, you know, company where they're selling trading cards. People go trade them on eBay or whatever.
Yeah.
Like you can't stop them. We don't facilitate the trading, but they can be traded wherever people want to trade them. But that's not, you know, we don't sell with that express intention that people go and trade them. I mean, the reality is that people trade everything in the world.
Sure.
You can't stop it. So,
sure.
But it is a network access token.
Okay. But it's not like a cryptocurrency where you can go onto an exchange and there's a daily fluctuating exchange rate. It's not like that at all.
It may become that. And okay. So that's up to, you know, the thing about creating public networks is that it's up to the community what they want it to become.
Okay. And the money that you've raised through this process, it's a guaranteed $33 million, you said?
Again, it's not raised, it's sold. I mean, we've got revenues. Mm. We're booking revenues right now, guaranteed revenues.
Yeah.
The company's, it's in our second year
of
$33 million
yes.
guaranteed. We're paying taxes on it as income tax.
Okay.
So we're filing taxes as income, that's software sales. So it's one of the fastest growing companies in Silicon Valley, you know, ever.
Right.
We're a Delaware C Corp, you know, and we're a very new business, but it's definitely software. It's a software sale.
Okay.
We've only raised $6 million in investment money.
Right, through the traditional venture capital market.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. 5.75, and we've managed to get this product out the door with that money raised. And,
right.
And the product works. It's really good. People love it. So, the sales are going up.
How big is the team?
About 17 people. We have, we recently announced that we're setting up a South African office, so we're starting to hire developers there. I think we've got two now.
Okay.
In the past month, and we're going to be hiring a few more. Actually, we have four in Cape Town.
Okay.
The same as with GIF. We had a nice small team there. And the recent ruling and changes that allow us to set up a subsidiary in South Africa is going to be very good for South Africa because we can now, you know, pay people, from the holding company in the U.S. to the South African subsidiary versus having to use a third-party sort of entity.
Mm.
So we're able to hire the best people, bring them in under Civic. And so we are looking to hire just the top talent we can find in SA. And put them into the Civic office. We're not going to have a very big office there. We'd like to keep the company reasonably small, but we want to hire the best people and give them all the upside and benefits of being part of, you know, Civic and being part of what we're doing in the U.S. and globally. I think there's a huge opportunity.
So is it going to be a development team here, is it?
Mainly development, yeah. There may be some business development at some point.
Okay.
One of the problems in South Africa is it tends to be a very slow-moving market. I mean, you know, for the amount of revenue we're talking about, when we have to engage with the big banks or, the financial services companies, like, we don't have the time to go invest months and months in business development for really what is a small deal relative to what we do in the U.S. And the education cycle is pretty high. There's a lot, and because what we're doing is so cutting edge and new, it takes a lot of time for these guys to get their heads around what we're doing.
Mm.
And that unfortunately detracts us from growing faster in other markets. So right now we've taken the approach that we've got so much inbound interest and revenue coming in from other places that we're going to just focus there. But if there is a need to have someone on the ground there, we will. But for now, we're hoping that we can just give well-documented APIs and information and examples that if people in South Africa want to use it. I mean, look, put it this way. Small websites in South Africa. I know Sweep South is busy integrating Civic right now. It'll be live soon. I'm an investor there. And, you know, there are a few others that are putting Civic into their sites. They're going to benefit from the network quicker. And eventually it becomes something which the network effect basically creates this, like, pool effect that people just start using it because it's just easier and cheaper and faster. We also drive the cost of identification and KYC, Fika Rica down dramatically, probably down 80% in all markets we're going to operate in. To answer your question, we'll have a small team in South Africa. We're not going to focus heavily on BizDev. It needs to be, you know, pool driven versus push driven. We'll help support people who want to implement it, but we just don't have time to do hard sales. We've got too much BizDev coming in.
Sure. What is the long-term revenue model for the business? Do you go and work with governments, with banks, with organizations like that to take the product to market? Or will you work with dev partners? Will you license partners? What's the go-to-market model for this business long-term?
Yeah, so it's complicated to explain, but we basically have a smart contracting system. And so when the smart contracts execute, we take a commission.
Okay.
So I'll give you a simple example. I'll just use generic bank names. So you've got bank A that has you as a customer, and that customer goes to bank B and wants to open up an account. Because bank A has already paid, whatever, 20 Rand to verify that person's identity, when that customer goes to bank B, they can give those credentials from their device to bank B. Mm. Bank B can check that bank A approve these credentials, and through our contracting system, they can say, well, we'd rather, instead of doing this whole person's ID verification process again and paying 20 Rand, we're going to rather go pay Bank A 5 Rand, and so they get a royalty. Now, here's the key thing. Bank A isn't giving the credentials to Bank B. All they're doing is they're getting a royalty through our network that the credentials were used, so the user is always in control of what happens, and Bank B is happy to pay because they're saving 75%, you know, or even more on that transaction. Bank A gets to recoup some money, and the customer now has an account at another bank, and they don't have to go through all the hassle of having to, you know, pull out their papers and whatever else and verify the identity again. So it's a cheaper and more secure way of reselling identification information. And so we take a cut. So if that $5 is paid, we may take $1 and we pay $4 to Bank A, and everyone's happy. So that's the business model.
Okay.
But now for small sites, where small sites are using us as a login service or as a two-factor authentication service, there's no charge. It's free. You can use it all day long. So we don't charge for being logging in. But the moment you want to verify someone's driver's license or their passport information, that's where the fees come in.
Okay, understood. Vinny, I want to talk a bit about your other investments. You've got quite a lot of investments that you've made here in South Africa, right through the venture capital firm Newtown Partners. What are some of those investments? I know you mentioned Sweep South, but you're invested in some blockchain and cryptocurrency startups as well, aren't you?
Yeah, I would say the top three investments out of the company is Sweep South is definitely our head and shoulders, the most valuable and successful business. We invested there very early on with the first money into that company, and the returns have been amazing, and they're building such a phenomenal business. It's been amazing to see how they grow. SA Flores was the one deal I did on Dragon's Den, which was the most successful deal from Dragon's Den. And that business has grown to become really, they're getting a lot of momentum. It's taken a while to build it up, and we've had to go through some changes and this usual startup stuff, but it's doing so well. I'm very impressed with the guys running it now. And we've also got Augmentors, which is an interesting one. So Augmentors, I did the we did an ICO for them in January. So I invested on Shark Tank on the show. They were trying to solve the problem. They had this really cool game that works on an app on your phone. They were trying to solve the problem of creating rarities. So I said, look, why don't you just use the blockchain for this? So we did that. We did an ICO in January. We sold tokens at 5 cents per token, and they're trading in the aftermarket right now in the secondary markets at like $1.50.
Okay.
So it's 30 times return for these gaming tokens, which is actually interesting because you use these tokens to play the game, and the game isn't out yet, but people are so excited about being able to buy these creatures and whatever else, and this could be the next Pokemon Go, whatever. Whatever the case is, I just think that it's really interesting how you can use crypto sales and to create rarity and tokens that are used for other applications other than payment like Bitcoin. So those are the three big winners. And so we sold $1 million worth of tokens in January, and in Rands that's $50 million into the company in capital, which they've now got. And those tokens are going to be very interesting to see how that plays out. And they're able to develop the game and get it live to market. And, Newtown Partners have been involved in finding these types of businesses.
Mm.
And we look for new things all the time. We've got some other things up our sleeve. But, the thing is this, people don't realize we don't actually – like we probably see hundreds of pitches a year. We don't do a lot of deals.
Mm.
But the ones we do, we try and make sure they're very successful. And that's just because of bandwidth. I mean, we work closely with the startups that we do invest in. We make sure that we give them all the support we can.
Yeah.
And we have a different view to supporting and building these businesses. It's not a it's not a shotgun approach. Now, on the TV shows, sure, I'll take a punt on a few more deals than I normally would.
Yeah.
You know, just the nature of the format. But other than that, it's a lot harder because I think we have a situation in South Africa where we don't have enough, second time round entrepreneurs or third or fourth or fifth time round entrepreneurs that have been there, done it, and know how to do it. There are a lot, but they're not relative to the number of new guys starting out. There's very few. So we don't have enough experience, but it's building up and it's improving. Mm. And so as we get this sort of second layer of mentorship coming, so the guys that are successful this round will come and help the next round. So give back the same way myself and Lou are doing it through Newtown Partners. That helps rebuild it. So look at Silicon Valley, they've had decades of this. Look at South Africa, they've probably in the tech world, they've had maybe a decade.
Yeah.
And so it's still building up.
Yeah. Vinny, I wanted to actually ask you about South Africa and not just the tech scene. You must have a unique perspective. You were born and raised in South Africa. You're now living in the epicenter of the tech universe, if you like, in San Francisco. You must be watching everything that's happening in South Africa right now, politically and economically, and must have some views on what's happening. What's your take, positive or negative, on where the country is going? Are you still optimistic about the future of South Africa broadly, and then perhaps more specifically on the tech scene here?
I think this is a watershed year for South Africa in many respects.
Yeah.
So I'll reserve judgments until the end of the year. I think let's see what happens in the next 6 months. I mean, we all know what's going on. Let's just see what happens, because I think that's something. I mean, all the banks have been downgraded. The country's been downgraded. Yes, we know we're in the shitter. Okay. let's see what happens. And I'm optimistic that the people of South Africa one change and things can get better, and we've got talent and we've got the ability to make a difference.
Mm.
But the window for us to retain ourselves as a leading nation in Africa is closing shortly. And so I'm going to withhold judgment for now, but I think by early next year we'll know where we're going.
Hopefully we'll have a more positive story this time next year. Vinny, just on the tech scene in South Africa, though, are you still involved at all in Silicon Cape? Do you keep up to date with what's happening there? And what's your views on the startup scene here?
You know, I think when Justin and I started that like 7 years ago, actually 8 years ago, whatever it was, it was really a community. We started it, but we said, okay, the community needs to drive it, and I think they have very well. Lou's more involved than I am. Obviously, I'm sitting 10 hours time difference away. I come to South Africa once or twice a year.
Yeah.
I'm very busy on the ground in the US with all the stuff I'm doing here. Even right now, people send me pictures and stuff to invest. I don't even look at it. I have to ignore the emails. I tell them, please email Newtown Partners. I've got a great team there, like 7 people.
Mm.
They know exactly my criteria. They know what I'm looking for. I don't take pictures anymore. I don't have the time or capacity to look at it.
Sure.
I'm very focused on Civic, and that's all I'm doing. So, my perspective, we're still investing actively. We're seeing good deals come up from time to time. I get an update once a month on what's interesting. We'll make investments as we see fit. But I think I'm definitely seeing the quality improving over time in the tech world.
Mm.
So that's a good thing. There's just not enough of it. And, really excited about Sam Paddock. With his exit, with Get Smarter's exit, that's great. I've known Sam for a long time. He's a great entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And so those are the types of success stories we want to keep seeing, and they need to happen more frequently. I think there's a lot of positive signs. But again, the biggest problem is the broader economy. It grows too slowly. So, and there's a lot of regulatory sort of pushback with entrepreneurs on pushing the envelope. So the problem in South Africa is you just don't get enough high growth companies that go from zero to hero in a couple of years, and it's a long slog, and that's a problem because people get tired, they get burnt out, and then the money doesn't recirculate. So when I look at stuff like Sweep South, where they've gone from zero to tens of millions of dollars, the rands in revenue in 1 or 2 years, that's the type of stuff that gets me excited, when people can go from zero to 100 in 2 or 3 or 4 years. And even then, by the way, 100 million rand is not that much money in dollars, but at least it's a much faster pace than other companies that grow slowly. So for tech to work, you need to grow quickly, and you need to eat into existing markets at a much higher rate than a normal business. So business planning and all that stuff kind of goes out of the window. You just need good investors to support your growth. And I think the other problem in South Africa is the investment community, that they don't understand startups, and they don't understand high growth startups especially.
Yeah.
And so when valuations double in 3 months, they don't understand how that's possible because it doesn't fit the spreadsheet model. You know, when here's a good example. I just sold Gift for, a good amount of money in 2.5 years, 3 years ago. And when I started Civic, I didn't get any South African investors emailing me saying, Vinny, we'd love to invest in a new company. You're a great entrepreneur or whatever. Like, I would happily have spoken to them and said, yes, sure, that's what we're doing. And, maybe the valuation would have been high. I think we raised it just over 100 million rand valuation initially. But, 2 years in, yes, and we just did 33 million bucks in sales already. There's no hunger, and largely because it's not their own money on the line. They're just kind of managing funds, money, or whatever else. There's no, think about it, okay? If I put out a call and said to South Africans, hey, who wants to invest in my next company when I started Civic, I would have had so many people. I mean, I didn't do that. I was oversubscribed, and I had all the US VCs backing me. I didn't have to bother.
Yeah.
But literally, the South African VCs, why wouldn't they want to just take a punt on me and my next company, right? At a seed round sort of investment. But no one bothered emailing.
Interesting.
This is my point. When it comes to investing, I focus on the people. I've given money to people who I don't know what they're doing. It's like, oh, you start a new company? Here's a check. Here's, $25,000, $50,000. Right. Business plan, don't worry about it. I trust you.
Yeah.
And literally those that, here's an example. If Elon Musk started a company tomorrow and said, I'm starting a new company, which is the one last week, everyone's giving money.
Yes.
It's so obvious, right? But no one bothers, and they say, no one, it's kind of weird. It's just lethargic, complacent.
You're right. And
the problem with looking at spreadsheets, they become very valuation sensitive.
Yes.
Instead of looking at the big picture of what this could be, it's like the mentality in South Africa that investors have is, how do you protect capital in venture capital? Which is a kind of oxymoron.
Mm.
Venture capital is not about protecting capital. I had a startup the other day which I invested. I put $50,000 in, so it's close to a million rand in.
Yeah.
And they took me aside and they said, we're down to a third of the money back. We can give you 15 cents or 30 cents on the dollar back. And we're thinking of shutting the company down. And they were having some issue at the time. And I said, guys, I don't care about 30 cents on the dollar back. Okay. It doesn't make a difference. I made the investment in you guys. I trust you. Mm. You'll pivot the business. You have some ideas. And I had a chat with them. And they were literally going to refund all the investors' money and give them something back. And I said, rather go out there and fail. The biggest mistake you can make when you take investor money is to protect yourself from failure, from the sense that you're giving up instead of failing. Okay, don't give up. Rather fail. Fail is better, but don't give up, because if you give up, you never know. So this company wound up not giving up. They didn't give us the money back, and now they're succeeding.
Mm.
So they solved the problem, and now they're worth double what I paid for them already.
Mm.
And it's because I told them, I don't care about the money. But in South Africa, most investors would have probably told them, give us 30 cents on the dollar back. Who cares?
Mm.
You know?
I suppose it comes down to an aversion to risk, which
that's the problem.
There's much
so
less of an aversion.
Capital, don't,
yeah.
Why, if you're risk averse, don't go into venture capital.
Indeed.
and then if you want venture capital returns, don't give it to people who are risk averse.
Yes.
What's the point of giving capital to people who think like bankers? We need to give capital. If you want venture capital returns, you have to give it to people who think like entrepreneurs.
Yeah, yeah. Excellent
point. And the whole point is, our Newtown Partners, we've done 25 investments, maybe 20, 25 investments.
Mm.
I don't know what the final numbers are, but probably 15 of those are total outright failures. But guess what? The top three winners are paying for all of those in spades, and our returns are profitable.
Mm.
You don't have to win every single bet. It's like blackjack. You don't have to win every single hand. But the hands you win, you need to have doubled down on, split the aces, all that stuff, and then it pays off all the losses.
Yeah.
That's kind of how you have to balance risk. And I don't think that the South African VC community understands that.
Interesting. Vinny, just lastly, and maybe for a bit of fun, I see Forbes and other publications have described you as the Bitcoin oracle over your ability to predict the value of Bitcoin, which has, of course, been absolutely flying over the last few years, and Ethereum too. Even non-techie friends of mine have started asking me if they should buy Bitcoin or Ethereum or some other cryptocurrency. In your view, has this whole thing become overhyped, and is it due for a major correction? And second part of that question, if my grandmother asked you if she should be investing in Bitcoin or Ethereum, etc., what would your advice to her be?
My advice to people is don't invest in stuff you don't understand, first of all. Okay. Second of all, I think Bitcoin is, and the whole crypto space is a little bit overinflated right now, very frothy.
Right.
I think there are some existential risks to the ecosystem in the next month or so, regarding the hard fork, the soft fork. It's technical risks which people don't understand.
Okay.
And these risks may play out okay, and it may go up to $4,000, but equally it can go down to $400.
Yeah.
So we just don't know where it's going to play out. So personally, I'm largely out of the market. I've got a small position in. But I'm going to sit and wait because I don't mind paying a premium once these issues are resolved. But I'd rather not be sitting in losing money. So I think that you know, when returns are high, risks are high. It's just a function of economics.
Mm.
So I think right now the risks are pretty high. If you've got Bitcoins, you've made a good return, sure, you can hold them for the long term. It'll probably be okay. But I think in the short term, there's some risk which could cause a massive collapse or a down cycle. And so – you know, I did predict to get to 3,000 this year. It got to 3,000 a lot earlier than I thought, which makes me a little bit more concerned that there's just too many people buying who don't understand the technical risks. And so I'd rather sit in the background and just wait it out just a little bit and see what happens. You know, again, I don't buy Bitcoin so it can change my life. I'm using Bitcoin because I can change the lives of others.
Sure.
So I think that the Bitcoin is a great sort of platform for changing the world. A lot of people are speculating that for them, Bitcoin is their long-term savings plan. I don't need that.
Yeah.
So we have different objectives, and I think that I just don't like the way people think about things right now and the risks and just the dogma attached to owning Bitcoin. Yes, long term it's great, but there are some short term risks. There's no guarantee that Bitcoin is going to be around in its current form in 5 or 10 years time. I mean, in a month's time, you could have 5 Bitcoins because that's a big problem because of the way things are playing out in the technical community right now. So personally, I would just say I'd be very cautious to everybody. Right now, sure, you may be losing some upside, but I don't like. I personally just don't like the risks that I'm seeing on the horizon, and I may be maybe just getting too old and too risk averse in this sector. But the reality is that the more you know about something, the more aware you are of risks, the more informed you are, the more you'll make these sorts of calls, and that's kind of the call I'm making right now. Is that I know too much, and therefore I'm going to be conservative, and. The risk, remember, risk is still risk. So I may be, there's maybe, let's say there's a 20% chance I'm right, and so everything works out, and 80% chance that I'm wrong, and therefore it plays out, and everyone makes money, and Bitcoin keeps going up. Great. I'm happy for everyone. I'm happy for Bitcoin.
Mm.
And everyone will think, okay, well, Vinny was just being cautious and wrong. But in the chance that I'm right, what's the downside? It's pretty heavy.
Mm.
And so I just don't like the risk-adjusted returns I'm seeing. Right now, after August, after this is resolved and there's a path to scaling Bitcoin going forward, then I'll be more open to jumping in and saying, well, let's get more aggressive on it. But for now, I think that there's going to be a lot of fear and uncertainty and doubt over the next month. So I'm being cautious.
Mm. And I like your advice. Don't invest in something you don't understand. It's probably good advice in any field.
Exactly.
Vinny Lingham, thank you so much for taking time out of your hectic schedule to talk to Tech Central today. It's been a fantastic discussion, and best of luck with Civic.
Thanks, Duncan.